Well, especially if you grew up on a typical American diet, the idea of plant-based meals probably sounds pretty foreign and, depending on what you imagine would be on your plate, maybe not very tasty. Well, I'm betting that our guest may just be able to change your mind about that. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Happy New Year. Terry Hope-Romero has written best-selling vegan cookbooks like Veganomicon, The Ultimate Vegan Cookbook, Vegan Cupcakes Take Over the World, Vegan Cookies Invade Your Cookie Jar, and Viva Vegan, 200 authentic and fabulous recipes for Latin food lovers. Her most recent book is Vegan Eats World, 300 international recipes for savoring the planet. Terry holds a certificate in plant-based nutrition from Cornell University. She lives, cooks, and eats in New York City. Terry, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Judith. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And, you know, I think that it's a great time to talk about this. You know, the start of the new year, people are often kind of trying to recalibrate and say, okay, you know, it's been busy during the holidays and end of the year things. And you know, this is a good time to kind of think about getting back to good habits and maybe starting some new ones. And certainly, I think how we eat and what we eat is often pretty high on the list of ways that we're thinking of, you know, just making some tweaks to be healthier and still enjoy those really satisfying meals. I think for people that might not have been exposed much to vegetarian, let alone vegan eating, that, you know, when they think of delicious comfort food, especially, and certainly in the middle of winter in Wisconsin, we're all about comfort food. Mm-hmm. You know, vegan and vegetarian doesn't necessarily, you know, come out top on the list. But I certainly think that that's not necessarily true. And so hopefully you'll be able to give some folks great ideas about how they can add some more plant-based meals into their diet. First, let's talk about what vegan is specifically and how it's different from vegetarian.
Yeah, absolutely. So vegan is sort of the next steps that some people like to think of it that way, where you exclude all animal products from your diet. So I think most people now are very familiar with vegetarians that just they don't eat beef, they don't eat chicken, they don't eat fish, but vegans also don't eat dairy products. That includes butter, that eggs, milk, they don't eat eggs as well. They don't eat cheese, they don't eat honey. So there's that food group,
right.
And the old-fashioned four food group is not in there. So that's basically it with vegan.
And I think the honey one is something that surprises people because, you know, obviously eggs, you know, are an animal product and dairy, but people don't necessarily think of honey as being an animal product, even though we all know that it comes from bees.
Yes, yeah, that is. It's something of a controversy in the vegan sphere, and it has to do more with just that it comes from an animal,
mm-hmm.
Rather than from the health aspect of it. But to be safe, let's just include that in there.
Sure. And how did you yourself come to be vegan?
Well, I was vegetarian at 16, and I did that for a while before there was the internet, before there was a lot of information out there about how to do this. But vegan came to me later when I moved to New York City in my 20s, and I met actual vegans there, and there were just more places to go eat, mm-hmm. more places to shop, and I just had more resources to draw from. And I was interested in the health benefits of because a lot of old vegetarian cookbooks just seem to, when you take out the meat, just so rely heavily on so much dairy and eggs, it becomes mm-hmm. overwhelming, and the dishes aren't really that good for you. And but then also the concept of the challenge of how to make delicious, wholesome, yummy, appealing food without any animal products really appealed to me. I love a challenge. So a combination of a few things and becoming more aware of like the conditions that animals that produce eggs and dairy are treated and the environmental impact as well. So a lot of things came to me.
Well, and you mentioned the health benefits, but as you said, you know, it's kind of like you could be vegetarian and, you know, live on cheese and ice cream. So, you know, how healthy could that be? But I think for a lot of people, if they're used to eating meats and animal products regularly, they have a hard time believing that a truly plant-based diet can be healthy, you know, especially thinking about where do you get your protein from, where do you get your calcium. How do you, as a vegan, and as we mentioned, you have a certificate in plant-based nutrition, how do you make sure that you're getting all of the things that you need, you know, to have a healthy body?
Well, the focus is really, and it should be on whole foods. on eating foods that have been minimally processed and are closest to their natural form. And that doesn't mean excluding cooking. I love to cook. I do eat some raw things like salads and whatnot. But, you know, cooking also is a very important part of how we assimilate all those vitamins and nutrients from food. But that includes really just eating lots of vegetables. And more evidence is just showing that even people that do eat meat can benefit by just including more vegetables into their diet. But a big part of my diet also includes things like nuts, many different kinds of beans, whole grains, interesting whole grains like quinoa and farro. So it's really just, instead of looking at vegan as limiting what you eat, it actually in many ways can expand your diet because you just start learning about all these interesting fruits and vegetables and grains and nuts and cooking techniques that you may have never heard of before.
Well, and actually you just mentioned quinoa, which is a very high protein grain. So that's definitely one way of getting protein. Shireen commented on our Facebook page, we eat mostly vegetarian and vegan meals at home. But when we go out to eat, we often order seafood, but no red meat, poultry or pork. And only a small amount of eggs, cheese, and yogurt. It's a wonderfully healthy way to eat. I love anything with quinoa and just about any form of potato.
There you go.
And I want to let people know that I actually made your quinoa salad with pistachios and dates for lunch the other day. And I put a picture of it up on the Facebook page. That's the Larry Mehler Show. And Mehler is M-E-I-L-L-E-R. And it got rave reviews from both my daughter and my husband. And I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I think often we think of salads as, you know, something on the side of what you're really eating. But I have to say with the quinoa in there and also the pistachios, it was so satisfying, and it really kept me going all afternoon. No problem with, you know, being hungry 2 hours after having lunch.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be done, and done joyfully.
Well, Steve in South Milwaukee has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Steve.
Hello. I've been trying to be on a vegetarian diet. I'm concerned about beans and the plant lectins. Are you familiar with those?
Oh, can you repeat? You're concerned with the
lectins, the anti-nutrients that are found in beans that tend to attach to the various proteins in the body and cause havoc?
No. I've heard of these before, but I don't know necessarily about them causing havoc or anything like that. I mean, people have been eating beans for thousands of years, and especially when they combine them with other things like vegetables and other complementary grains, they form a complete protein mix in your body. And it's a food combination that people have been eating all over the world in many different cultures for a very long time and have been very healthy from it and have lived long, healthy lives. So I wouldn't get too hung up about that.
Probably like most things, you know, eating a wide variety of foods, you're going to minimize any negative aspects and maximize whatever positives there are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I mentioned before, a lot of people tell me that when they do switch to a vegan diet and even just a vegetarian diet, one thing is start cooking because so many people just don't cook. And you really have to learn how to cook for yourself. It doesn't mean you're never going to go out to eat, because you will. But you also start learning about all these new foods. I mean, so many people are like, wow, I didn't know lemongrass existed, right. Or I didn't know how there's so many different kinds of quinoa, not just one kind of quinoa. That you really can, like, there's just so many more foods to draw from that not only are fun to eat, but also incredibly good for you.
We're talking with vegan cookbook author Terry Hope Romero. Her most recent book is Vegan Eats World, 300 International Recipes for Savoring the Planet. I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mehler. You can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Terry, you know, we've touched on the benefits, especially health benefits, but certainly eating more plant-based meals can be a real boon to your budget as well.
Absolutely. I think that I often hear people say, like, I became vegetarian or became vegan and suddenly I started spending more on groceries. Well, if you are cooking, you will probably spend a little more, but you'll also be avoiding, like, meat is expensive, milk is expensive. All these things do cost a lot of money. And over the course of weeks and months, you'll see that you can't actually do this affordably by focusing on whole foods and staying away from the things like the tofu hot dogs and the very heavily processed fake meats. Those are fine as a transition, but you don't need to eat those to eat this way. Absolutely not.
Well, and there are ways to, especially if you're transitioning from being used to eating meat and dairy, there are ways to make meals more satisfying and help you kind of make that transition. So for one thing, mushrooms can have both that really meaty texture, especially something like a portobello, but also it has that umami, that really rich, savory foodiness.
Yes, absolutely. Umami is so important. And that's another fascinating thing that a lot of people learn about when they learn about vegan cooking, is that it's that fifth taste element that really adds that savory richness and boldness to food. And there's so many things that you can find in the plant kingdom that do that, such as mushrooms, soy sauce, many kinds of beans. Like when you learn about those kind of food combinations and how to work those into your recipes, you'll really notice the difference.
And I noticed in one of your recipes you call for smoked salt to give that smoky flavor too.
Oh yeah, smoked salt is really wonderful. I mean, there's so many great ingredients that you can find in gourmet stores or things that are considered very fancy that sometimes people don't associate with vegan cooking.
And we have lots more to talk about with Terry Hope Romero about vegan cooking after this look at the news. Stay with us. Well, if you grew up with a typical American diet, if you think of eliminating all the meat products and dairy products, anything that comes from an animal, you might picture something kind of sad on your plate, maybe a little salad, maybe a vegetable side dish. But there's a whole world, literally, of food out there and recipes that can help you introduce a little more plant-based meals into your diet and also enjoy what you're eating. Terry Hope Romero has a mission of helping all of us introduce more plant-based meals into our diets, whether we decide to become vegetarian or vegan, or we just want to have a little lighter, more healthy meal once a week or so. She has some great ideas. Her most recent book is Vegan Eats World, 300 International Recipes for Savoring the Planet. And Terry joins us from her home in New York City. Terry, thanks again for spending New Year's Day with us.
Thank you.
And I wanted to say that your book, Vegan Eats World, you say that the cookbook is really just a tour of your own neighborhood of Queens, New York. How is that true?
Yeah, I really love living here because it's kind of like having the world with just a couple of subway rides away. Queens is one of the most ethnically diverse neighborhoods in North America. And, I mean, we kind of got it all here, like every kind of Asian nationality, all of Latin America is practically represented. You have people from Europe. I mean, there's really so much here, and there's so many great markets and restaurants and just fun places to spend the afternoon shopping that it's there's just so much inspiration here.
And your own ethnic background has inspired a lot of your cooking. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, my folks are from Venezuela, but I was born here in the United States, New England. And while I grew up with a lot of Venezuelan food at home in New England, they also just have a real interest in different kinds of other Latin American cuisine and a big enthusiasm for shopping at different ethnic markets. So growing up with Latin American cuisine, like in New England, my parents already were making a lot of substitutions. Hmm. So it's kind of funny because that's one of the things you end up doing with a lot of vegetarian and vegan cooking. You kind of think of new creative ways to make substitutions for old familiar foods. So I think that sort of laid the groundwork early on for what I was going to do later with food.
Well, and I also think that, of course, you know, if there are recipes that we really love, often we're making substitutions to maybe lighten it up a little, maybe, you know, using less fat or, you know, changing proportions to make it healthier. But also, you know, sometimes the easiest way to say, you know, some people do meatless Mondays where they decide to have vegetarian meals on Mondays. And that way, at least one day a week, they're thinking ahead, they're planning out a menu, and they're doing something that's meatless. Sometimes it's a lot easier to just say, I'm going to try something totally different instead of trying to take those old favorites and tweak them so much that they're really not very recognizable anyway.
Yeah, I mean, my cooking takes both approaches. I end up with this book, I do have a lot of traditional foods, but I also have a lot of things I just was really inspired by. For instance, I use a lot of different Middle Eastern cooking seasonings with quinoa, which is a Latin American grain, mm-hmm. to make a new thing like the dish you just made.
Right.
Uses quinoa, which is used in South American cooking, but it's seasoned with pistachios and dates and techniques that are you often see in Lebanese cuisine.
And sumac so on top.
Yes, sumac is amazing. It's a wonderful Lebanese spice. It's actually a ground-up berry that tastes salty and sweet and savory all at the same time. And I just love using that, like mashing that up with other different kinds of cuisine.
And it's a gorgeous color, too. It's this very rich, like reddish-brown color that it just, yeah, it visually spices up any dish that you sprinkle it on as well.
Yeah, it becomes habit.
Well, and so we just started talking about spices. You focus on a few elements that can really make any food more interesting and certainly more delicious. And, you know, the world is full of great spices and spice mixtures, you know, to excite our taste buds. And especially if we're, you know, if we're not used to eating vegetarian or vegan, having the, you know, those spices that just kind of explode in our mouths can really go a long way on the satisfaction scale.
Absolutely. One of the things I love doing with this book was making spice blends at home. And it's one of those things that may sound a little overwhelming, like, oh, I have to make my own curry powder. And you don't have to do that. You could definitely buy off-the-shelf curry powder and make all these dishes and really love them. But taking that little extra step and finding these spices, which are often very inexpensive in Indian markets and a lot of Asian markets, and making your own curry powder can really make the dish just something entirely different and new and special.
I'm actually looking forward to making the Ethiopian flourless chocolate cake tomorrow as a birthday treat. Mm-hmm. And that calls for a really interesting spice blend that you wouldn't necessarily think of putting into a cake, into something sweet.
Yeah, it's a traditional Ethiopian spice blend that, again, you can buy, but you can make, and it's fairly simple. And that whole cake kind of represents the fusion cooking I was talking about. Chocolate cake is not a traditional Ethiopian thing, but I really love the idea of, because spicy chocolate is so popular now, mm-hmm. everyone's probably had some kind of Mexican chocolate thing. Why don't we take it a step further and take another spicy blend from another cuisine and apply it toward chocolate?
And I think when you look at those spice blends, too, even if you decide not to make them from scratch, but decide to buy a ready mixed blend, just reading the ingredient list and taking a look at the proportions, you might never have thought that, say, black peppercorns and cinnamon would go in the same mix. But there you see it. And then you think, oh, OK, that makes sense, because, when I eat it, I'm picking up, you know, that the spicy edge of the pepper, but then that really warm feeling of the cinnamon. And then it kind of helps you figure out those layers that you're tasting.
Yeah. It's really a lot of fun. And it really just gives you a whole new view of your food and how to make it something you really want.
I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for joining us, and Happy New Year to all of you. Terry Hope Romero is a vegan cookbook author. Her most recent book is Vegan Eats World, 300 International Recipes for Savoring the Planet. And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also leave a question or a comment on our Facebook page. That's The Larry Mueller Show. And let's go to Louise in Door County next. Hi, Louise.
Hi. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year.
My husband is on a no added salt diet, so that makes some cooking rather difficult and leaves many dishes rather tasteless. And I think that what you're talking about with the spices could be of help to us. But do you have any other ideas for people who are on low salt diets?
Sure.
And I will look your answer on the radio.
Great. Thanks, Louise.
Yeah, sure. So we were talking about umami before. Mm-hmm. And really, you have to think of what else can I step up with if I'm not going to be using salt. And, you know, and boosting things that have that rich, savory flavor profile, like mushrooms, not the soy sauce, because
right.
it contains a lot of sodium, but nuts, sometimes upping the fat in a little bit of in the dish. And I know a lot of people get a little nervous about that, but maybe applying a little extra olive oil or some nuts or avocado to add some more richness. Tanginess, sourness is another flavor that really is probably the most useful stand-in when you're not using salt. So lemon or mm-hmm. sumac, what we were talking about before, is an amazing spice in that it has kind of a salty flavor to it, even though there is no salt. there is so much flavor in that, that that could be another great friend when you're making something like a salad or even just sprinkling on like a sandwich or on top of a pasta. So yeah, so trying out those kind of foods. Nutritional yeast is another vegan, it sounds terrible, but it's a product made from yeast that it looks kind of like cheese powder. And it has tons of umami flavor and protein and B vitamins. It's actually very good for you. And using a little bit of that in some dishes, some pasta dishes, could also help to just boost flavor, boost all those things that you're missing from not adding salt.
And, you know, again, going back to your idea of kind of doing mashups between different cuisines, I think, you know, maybe you've always just had your, say, roasted asparagus or steamed asparagus with a little salt and maybe a little pepper on it, and maybe butter. And if you're trying to, you know, eat less sodium and maybe less fat, that's probably not a great option. So instead of just leaving those things off, like you said, you know, a squirt of lemon or putting an unexpected mix of spices on. I know my go-to sweet potato recipe now is just cubing up sweet potatoes, tossing them with some olive oil, and then using garam masala, which is an Indian spice mix, and roasting it. And you get the sweetness, you know, a little caramelization of the sweet potatoes. It brings out a lot of those flavors in the garam masala. And really, I mean, maybe I'm biased, but it goes with anything. So
it kind of does. I'm obsessed with garam masala, an Indian spice. I actually put it in apple pie. That's my go-to apple pie spice.
And actually, there's another mix. Being part of a French family, there's a traditional, well, it's kind of like a bread, like a tea bread, a pain de pice, basically spice bread. And it's got this wonderful mixture of cardamom and cinnamon and star anise and I believe turmeric and all these great spices. And I use that in all kinds of, you know, apple cobblers, apple cakes. Those spices go great with pretty much any fruit also.
It sounds great.
Sorry for anyone who hasn't been able to have lunch yet, because we're probably making you hungry. So we talked about, you know, spices being a great way to enhance flavors and make things taste different and maybe bigger than you might think they would. You also talk about the fact that there are so many grains out there, and we did talk about quinoa earlier. There's so many grains that we here in the U.S. have not traditionally eaten, but, you know, are just a treasure trove of flavors and textures and really healthy for us, too.
Absolutely. Like good old bulgur is something that I got back into working with this book and working with a lot of Middle Eastern cuisine and the flexibility of it, using it in soups or in casseroles. Farro, a wonderful Italian wheat that is kind of like pearl barley, and I love it in like the typical soups, vegetable soups, or you would use pasta. I love using farro instead because it holds up so much nicer and it has such a satisfying, chewy texture. Mm. All the different kinds of rice. Red rice and black rice. There are really so many wonderful grains that can really just make food so exciting. Like just especially if you're you know, leaving out that big piece of meat in the middle of the plate, investigating those kind of grains and whole grains can really have big benefits.
Right. And so much of it is, you know, we talked about umami as that feeling of richness that you get in your mouth. But, you know, so much of it really is how satisfying the texture is and, you know, feeling satisfied by what you're eating.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The thing is, I think too often people think that because I'm not eating animal products, I'm not going to be satisfied. But I really am a big fan of hearty, full flavored food. I mean, I like salad just as much as like the next guy, but
yeah, there are only so many salads.
Right. There's only so many salads, but even then you can throw quinoa and nuts in it and suddenly it's a whole meal.
Well, let's go to Andrea in Wonder Lake, Illinois. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
So many Americans' only main go-to additive is sugar, and what you're speaking of is experimenting and exploring with the taste buds. But I think we're so addicted to sugar that that's just really all we think about. So since you are not using honey, and I'm pretty sure you're not using processed white sugar in vegan cooking, how do you get the sweetness? And then my second question, calcium, a big concern to women. If you're not eating dairy products, where do you get your calcium? And since my non-vegan lunch is waiting, I'll take my answers off the air.
Thanks, Andrea. And so Andrea's first question was, what do you use for sweetness when you want it in a vegan recipe?
I use a few things, and while I don't necessarily use the, you know, like the processed white sugar, there I do use vegan sugars that are, you know, that don't use the bone char, but kind of resemble it. They're made from dried sugar cane juice, and they have the versatility that regular sugar does have. And I use also things like agave. I use maple syrup. I use brown rice syrup. I use sometimes barley malt. I'm starting to experiment more using date sugar and date paste. There's something called coconut sugar that's made from coconut tree sap. I mean, like, I kind of like what I had mentioned before, once you have to step out of the normal box of, you know, like one thing that you use for everything, like, excuse me, you start learning about all these fascinating new ways to sweeten food. So there's so many alternative sweeteners out there. And I do a lot of dessert. So it depends on what I'm going for. That's what I use. And the calcium issue, it's good to talk about that. I mean, I know that's a big concern for a lot of people, and especially women, that there is calcium in vegetables, and there is calcium in nuts and in grains. I also do eat a lot of products that are enriched with calcium, like almond milk that is enriched with calcium, and, you know, and almond yogurts and soy yogurts. So I do include those in my diet, and I do take some supplements as well. So it all depends on what you're eating, and how much your level of activity too also can affect your bone density. So it's kind of a complex thing, but there is definitely calcium in vegetables.
Right, right.
And in plant foods. It's there. It's accessible. You just have to eat them.
Thanks for that call. And you can join the conversation with cookbook author Terry Hope Romero. Her most recent book is Vegan Eats World, 300 International Recipes for Savoring the Planet. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Leo in Dodgeville is on the line, so let's go there. Hi, Leo.
Howdy. Happy New Year to you guys.
Happy New Year.
As well. I just wanted to, I maybe missed it right at the top of the hour there, but gamacho was something that we like to use. My wife and I aren't, we don't have sodium issues really, but I just love the flavor of gamacho, and we make it ourselves, a quarter of a teaspoon of salt to a cup of sesame seeds, and then you just grind it up, and that flavor, it has that more salty, but this really nice from the sesame seeds. I don't know, you already have it in your cookbook there. I don't know, but to me, that's just one of the best seasonings for almost any kind of dish, especially if you're trying to cut down on salt a little bit. And I would also just like to mention rice syrup. As a good sweetener, maybe
sure.
You have that in your book as well. But it just metabolizes more slowly. Sugar, you know, you absorb it through your skin, even, you know, just regular processed sugar. But rice syrup just works. It takes into the body very, very slowly, and, you know, so you don't get that blast, that rush that you normally get from sugar anyway. But that's all I want to say.
Right. Thanks for that, Leo. And Terry, is that a seasoning that you're familiar with, the gamacho?
Oh. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. Both gamacho and brown rice syrup are two very old school vegetarian staples, and I've done a lot of stuff with them. I like to use many different things, though, for different kinds of foods. Like, I don't know if I'm making like a nice Italian style dish, I don't know necessarily want to throw sesame seeds on top of it.
Right.
I might use something else. And the brown rice syrup is very good in some things, but I don't know if I'd put that in fluffy cupcakes. Mm-hmm. So I like to take all my options into account when I'm making a dish to really get something that that I think can appeal to a lot of people, but that doesn't necessarily taste what we imagine vegetarian cooking to taste like from the 80s or the 70s.
And, you know, I'm sure that there are some people listening today, and, you know, if someone looks at a vegan recipe and it's not a style of cooking that they're used to, they can seem pretty intimidating because there are often ingredients in them that more standard or traditional cooks aren't familiar with. They're not sure where to get those ingredients. If someone wants to explore making more plant-based meals but are a little intimidated by this whole new, exciting but unknown world of ingredients and preparations, what's the best way to kind of ease your way into it?
Well, there's a few. One way might be to see it, ask your friends who are vegetarian or vegan and ask them what they do. And you may even know some. You may even not know that you know some. But kind of bringing it up and saying, so where do you like to eat? Is there a restaurant you like to go to? Can I join you at some point? Or just give me some recommendations. And I'm sure if you start talking to people, they will give you all kinds of recommendations about cookbooks, about websites. It's funny how every year, like, it's becoming more and more mainstream. Like, mm-hmm. the New York Times, almost every Thanksgiving around the area, they always have a big selection, a big feature all about vegetarian and now vegan options for Thanksgiving, one of the meatiest holidays mm-hmm. that we have. It is easier and more accessible than ever to find out all those kind of questions about nutrition, about what should I be eating, about what kind of recipes can I do, how can I take recipes I've always enjoyed and do something new with them. So we live in a pretty excellent time to start becoming vegan.
Well, I'm sure there are many restaurants around Wisconsin that can say this, but the one that I happen to be familiar with is here in Madison called the Green Owl, and it's all mm-hmm. vegetarian and mainly vegan. And my favorite dish there is the barbecued jackfruit sandwich. And I had never heard of jackfruit being used in that way at all. I had heard of it, but I'm sure I had never eaten it. And I love it. And then I read in your book that jackfruit is a really popular substitute for a place where you might want to have meat. And I find it really satisfying.
Yeah, it looks like pulled pork. I mean, you could show it to hardcore meat eaters and they're like, is that pork? You can shock them when you're eating that. But yeah, and the Green Isle is a lovely place. I've been there.
Great. So, yeah. And David on Facebook says that there's a wonderful documentary called Forks Over Knives with a cookbook that comes along that might be interesting. It's Plant-Based Way to Health is the subtitle of that.
Yeah, it's a great book, yeah, and the authors are awesome, so yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the Joy Cardine Show actually featured that not too long ago, so people might be interested in going to the WPR.org archive and pulling that up. So a caller was curious about vegan diets and how they treat mother's milk, i.e. for breastfeeding, as opposed to cow's milk. Is mother's milk acceptable in a vegan diet?
That's a little out of my league to talk about that, but I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
I think that breastfeeding your kid is totally vegan.
Okay. But it's an understandable question, so thanks
yeah,
for
sure.
that. You know, mm-hmm. if someone's just getting started, we have just a minute or so left, but, you know, is there one top piece of advice you would give to someone who wants to incorporate more plant-based meals into their diet?
I would say go at your own pace and don't compare your progress to other people. Don't try not to get overwhelmed. And for most people, it's going to be doing a little bit at a time and celebrating what you're doing as opposed to what you're not doing.
And Terry, what are you cooking this week?
Oh, wow. I'll admit I had a very late night. So today might be just going out for, I don't know, like Indian food or something. But yeah, it's cold here. So soups are definitely on the menu. Absolutely. Soups are a wonderful, healthy food that you can load up with lots of vegetables mm-hmm. and you could trim back the fat and you could start feeling, you can get back in your fighting shape. Because I know everyone this time of year really wants to feel healthy after all those nice holiday parties.
It's true. And, you know, new year, new start. But like everything, you know, if we do it in small chunks, it's a lot easier to stick with it. So, Terry Hope Romero, thanks so much for spending time with us today. It was really fun.
Thanks so much and have a great new year.
You too. Terry Hope Romero is the author of Vegan Eats World, 300 International Recipes for Savoring the Planet. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. Thanks so much for joining us today and Happy New Year.